Chapter 29, Opening Gambit. The reports sat on Zeke's desk like accusations, each one meticulously penned in Akasha's meticulous hand. He picked up the third sheet, scanning the details of yet another cultural evening hosted by Azra von Hohenheim. This time, the venue had been the Moonstone Gallery in the Second Circle, where 30 of Tradespire's richest citizens had gathered to appreciate a collection of imperial artwork while discussing the future of continental trade. Zeke set the paper aside with the others, his fingers drumming against the polished wood. Through his study window, the morning sun painted Tradespire in shades of gold and amber, the city already alive with the constant flow of commerce. "He's certainly keeping busy," Zeke murmured. "Observation Ambassador Azra has hosted 7 such gatherings in the past 2 weeks. Attendance has increased with each event. Let him play host, then." Zeke turned from the window, returning to the more pressing matters spread across his desk. Supply lines to Undercity, progress reports on the workshop expansions, and correspondence from potential clients in surrounding provinces. If he wants to waste his time on wine and poetry, that's his prerogative. The mana purifying device loomed in the corner of his workshop, a constant reminder of where his priorities lay. Every night spent in that chamber brought him closer to the peak of Grand Mage, closer to the strength he'd need when the Continental War inevitably resumed. Let Azra concern himself with dinner parties while Zeke forged real power. Yet as the days passed, the reports continued to accumulate. Azra had sponsored a promising young artist whose paintings now graced the homes of several merchant lords. He'd funded a trade route that reduced shipping costs between Tradespire and the Imperial provinces by 15%. He'd established a scholarship for children of middle-tier merchants to study at the Commerce Academy. Each gesture seemed calculated to build goodwill without appearing overtly political. The man moved through Tradespire's social circles like silk through fingers, leaving favorable impressions without seeming to try. "Show me the sales figures," Zeke said one afternoon, 3 weeks after that first meeting in the Celestial Garden. The numbers materialized in the air before him, Akasha's projection overlaying the usual healthy growth with a new trend line that made his jaw tighten. "Analysis. New orders have decreased by 23% over the previous month. More concerning, 5 established clients have cancelled existing contracts. Which ones?" The names appeared, and Zeke's frown deepened. House Corwin had been one of his first major clients, their contract a cornerstone of his early success. The Brass Wheel Trading Company had ordered 3 custom vessels just last season. Each cancellation came with polite explanations: budget constraints, shifting priorities, exploring other options. "Show me their recent activities." The connections formed like a spider's web in the air. Lord Corwin had attended 4 of Azra's salons. The Brass Wheel's chief partner had been seen dining with the Imperial Ambassador 2. The other 3 cancellations showed similar patterns. Zeke rose from his chair, pacing to the window. Below, one of his gondolas drifted past, its polished hull catching the light. The design was his, refined through countless iterations, superior to anything else in the skies. Yet superiority meant nothing if no one would buy it. "This is ridiculous," Zeke murmurs slowly. "He's not even competing with our product. He's competing with our reputation." Concurrence. The ambassador appears to be offering social and political capital rather than direct economic incentives. The workshop door opened, admitting Maya with her usual burst of energy. She'd taken to visiting during her breaks from training, her progress with the nature affinity already showing in the way plants seemed to lean toward her as she passed. "You're brooding," she announced, settling into what had become her usual chair. "It will give you wrinkles." Despite his concerns, Zeke felt his lips twitch toward a smile. "Us lords don't brood. We contemplate strategic positions." "Contemplating strategically about what?" He considered how much to share. Maya was clever, but she was also young, still innocent of the deeper games being played. "Business. Some contracts aren't renewing as expected." Her nose wrinkled. "Is it because of the other guy? Lou mentioned some of the older students at the academy have been talking about him. Apparently he throws amazing parties." Even here, Azra's influence spread. Zeke filed that information away, another thread in the pattern he was beginning to see. "Have any of them attended these parties?" he asked casually. "Some of their parents have," Giselle said her father came back talking about imperial literature and the benefits of expanded trade agreements. Maya picked up one of his experimental gear assemblies, turning it over in her hands. It sounded boring, honestly. Who wants to spend an evening discussing trade? More than you'd think, apparently. Especially when the discussion came with expensive wine and the implicit promise of imperial favor. The weekly merchant council meeting convened that evening in its usual chamber, the circular room filled with the subtle tension of competing interests. Zeke took his customary seat, noting how several lords who typically acknowledged him now seemed absorbed in their own conversations. The speaker called the session to order with usual efficiency. The agenda covered standard matters, trade route approvals, regulatory adjustments, tax assessments. Zeke contributed where relevant, his insights on logistics still valued even if the men offering them were viewed with new wariness. It wasn't until the formal business concluded that Lord Van Tyne spoke up, his voice carrying that particular tone of false casualness that set Zeke's teeth on edge. "I must say," Van Tyne began, adjusting his elaborate collar, "that young ambassador has been a breath of fresh air for our city's cultural scene. His salon on imperial poetry last week was particularly illuminating." Several lords murmured agreement. Lord Harrick, still new enough to lack subtlety, openly enthused about a deal Azra had proposed. "Indeed," Van Tyne continued, his gaze sliding toward Zeke with practiced innocence. "It's quite refreshing to see a von Hohenheim who understands the art of civilized discourse, building bridges rather than," he paused delicately, "burning them." The reference to Zeke's bounties against the Empire couldn't have been clearer if Van Tyne had spelled it out. Around the table, lords shifted in their seats, some hiding smirks, others studiously avoiding eye contact. Zeke's eyes narrowed, but he held himself perfectly still, his face an unreadable mask. Beneath the surface, however, the first flicker of genuine concern stirred within him. He had expected Azra to make a move against him. The man's words during their meeting had made that much clear. Zeke had braced for political maneuvering, legal challenges to his legitimacy, perhaps even another attempt to have him expelled from the city. This was something entirely different. Azra was not attacking at all. Instead, he was elevating himself socially, crafting a contrast so stark that it became a weapon in its own right. "The ambassador certainly seems devoted to fostering relations," Zeke said evenly. "Though I question whether his growing influence is truly cause for celebration. After all, he represents a foreign power." A few lords shifted uneasily. The pro-empire faction held significant sway in Tradespire, and their influence within the council was no secret. Yet they had managed so far to maintain the appearance of neutrality, though that image was beginning to fray. "Now, now," Lord Van Tyne said with a patronizing smile, "let's not spoil the evening with unpleasantness. I'm sure the ambassador would be happy to discuss any concerns through proper channels. He's remarkably approachable, I've found." The meeting ended soon after, the lords departing in their customary clusters. Zeke remained seated, watching them go, noting who walked with whom and who avoided whose eyes. Notice Lord Thorne attempted to approach but was redirected. Pattern suggests coordinated social isolation, so it had already begun. The invisible walls being erected around him, subtle but effective. How many more council meetings before he found himself truly alone in this chamber? Zeke rose and made his way out, footsteps echoing in the empty corridor. He'd underestimated Azra, dismissing the man's social maneuvering as wasteful pageantry. But perhaps that had been the point. While Zeke focused on building power, Azra had been building something equally valuable, influence. The walk back to his estate gave him time to think. His gondola business had weathered storms before, but those had been external pressures, competition, economic downturns, technical challenges. This was different. This struck at the relationships that made commerce possible in a city built on mutual benefit. By the time he reached his study, Zeke had begun to see the shape of the game being played. Just like himself, Azra couldn't challenge him directly without violating diplomatic protocols. But he could make Zeke's life difficult in a thousand small ways, each one perfectly legal, perfectly civilized. Question: shall I compile data on similar historical trade conflicts? No, Zeke said, settling behind his desk. This isn't about trade. He pulled out a fresh sheet of parchment, beginning to sketch connections. Azra at the center, lines radiating out to each merchant family, each cancelled contract, each subtle slight. The web was already larger than he'd realized. "So that's his move," he continued. "Azra's trying to prove that he's the true heir by being everything I'm not." Analysis. By embodying traditional merchant values, he positions Host as the outsider despite Host's actual title and achievements. Zeke set down his quill, staring at the web of connections. 3 weeks, and already the damage was beginning to show. How much worse would it get if he continued to ignore it? But what alternative did he have? He couldn't match Azra's social games without abandoning the very work that would matter when the real conflicts came. Every hour spent at a salon was an hour not spent growing stronger, not spent preparing for the war he knew was coming. "Show me the production schedules," he ordered. The numbers appeared, and Zeke forced himself to focus on what he could control. His gondolas would continue to be built, even if buyers grew scarce. His other ventures, the Undercity development, would provide somewhat of a cushion against the losses, though by how much remained to be seen. But as night descended on Tradespire, Zeke could not shake the echo of Vantine's words, a von Hohenheim who understands the art of civilized discourse, as though civilization were measured by wine selections and poetry recitations rather than by honor and morality. Azra wore the mask of a polished gentleman while his empire butchered helpless civilians half a world away. The hypocrisy was as blatant as it was infuriating, yet without someone to name the crime, it might as well not have existed at all. Through his window, the lights of the city sparkled like fallen stars. Somewhere out there, Azra was probably hosting another gathering, weaving another thread in his web of influence. And tomorrow, more contracts would quietly disappear, more lords would find reasons to avoid his company. The opening gambit had been played, subtle as string and twice as binding. The question now was how to respond without being drawn into Azra's pace. For the first time in a long while, Zeke found himself on uncertain ground, engaged in a battle he did not yet know how to win. Yet the most troubling part was that his very identity, along with the legacy of his mentor, hung in the balance.